didn't move. I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown. You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right. Another week, another big win for the Eagles as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 30, the Big 3-0. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where Greg Cosell and I dig deep into the Eagles' big Monday night football victory over the New York football Giants. We look ahead to the Carolina Panthers and the issues that they will present the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday night down in North Carolina. So very excited to dig deep into that with Greg. Following that, we've got Two Technique. My buddy Ike Reese, he's back again. We're double dipping here with Ike for the second week in a row here on Two Technique. And then we're going to close the show with my good friend. It's been far too long. Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net is going to help close the show here with Saturday Scouting. But before we get into all of that, it's time to welcome in my favorite guy in the room. And that's especially true this week because Chris Stevens is also here. Brian Thomas, the man with the plan. What is up, BT?
What's up, sir? How are you?
Doing wonderful. But not as good as Chris Stevens, apparently, who is sleeping on the other side of the studio here.
Esteemed intern who does a great job setting up and helping us out with the podcast and radio stuff is now having a slumber party there in our conference room. So
that's beautiful. Well, I it was a long night.
He was there late, but you know what? You and I were here there late.
That's right.
We're still chugging away.
Suck it up, young man.
It's week six. Let's go.
Exactly. Well, now it's week seven.
Hasn't rolled over.
Exactly. So week six, obviously a huge win for the Eagles over the Giants. A lot of really good things to get into. I was really impressed with the offensive line once again having another strong performance, being able to keep the run game going against a Giants defense that was, you know, again, I didn't think that they should have been ranked this high, but they were number two against the run in terms of yards per game. Against a tough front, they were able to get some yardage.
Mike Quick said the same thing. I was up in the booth again for this game, and Quick was like, this offensive line is mauling guys. And he was like, if they can play this way, this is going to be a really difficult team to stop because you've got to put eight guys in the box to try to stop this running game.
Exactly, and I'll talk about it a little bit more here with Greg Cosell and Chalk Talk, but they did some different things schematically as well to give themselves an advantage. So really interesting to see some tweaks here with the Eagles' run game. Sam Bradford obviously up and down, but you look on the defensive side of the football, this unit, I mean, look, we've been talking about it now for weeks. Just the defensive front has really come into its own. It's easily one of the top two or three units in the league. The linebacking core, Jordan Hicks, was called to play a huge number of snaps with D'Amico Ryans going down with an injury. So now, you know, you're relying on young players there, but the secondary is playing very well. Just overall, I thought Bill Davis probably called one of his best games as the defense coordinator of the Eagles against the Giants on Monday night, taking Odell Beckham out of the game in the second half. Just a really, really good game overall. And look, first place in the division, now you got to keep it going against an undefeated Carolina Panthers team. Let's get deeper into that matchup here with Chalk Talk and Greg Cosell.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Joining me once again here on Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, NFL Films senior producer Greg Cosell. And Greg, a huge win for the Eagles here on Monday Night Football against the New York Giants. Currently in first place at the top of the NFC East. Obviously still a division very much in flux, very much still up in the air, but good to be in this position. Let's start with the Eagles offense. And obviously we both have gone through the ups and downs of this unit throughout the course of the season. We've seen the what they can be here in 2015 and then also on the back end what you really don't want them to be. And it was interesting watching them on Monday night. You saw them go back to basics a little bit from the run game, but since they were executing, it came off very well. And I'm really pointing to going back to the inside zone with DeMarco Murray.
See, I think what you have to look at with DeMarco Murray, and I think John Gruden really explained it well, and we've kind of talked about this.
Sure.
DeMarco Murray is really, he's a downhill runner. Now, the Eagles' two foundation runs so far this season have been the outside sweep and inside zone.
Right.
And when all said and done, DeMarco Murray is not an outside sweep runner. And of the two runs that they run, inside zone is the preferable one, clearly. Now, in the second half, Murray had 17 for 97, and I would bet that 14 or 15 of those were inside zone. on the touchdown drive, he had three runs of 10-plus yards. They were all inside zone. And that is clearly...
From the shotgun, too.
Correct. But that's clearly the better of the two runs for him, because essentially what he is, he's a downhill runner. He's not a stick-his-foot-in-the-ground-and-cut runner. Everybody says, oh, he's a one-cut-and-go. He's not a one-cut-and-go runner. He's a straight-line track runner who's got very good natural power and is a very good finisher. But he's not a one-cut-and-go runner. He's a track runner, a downhill runner. And inside zone of the two runs clearly fits him better.
Yeah, and you know, we have not just the outside sweep, but then also just that outside zone play from the shotgun early in the season. A lot of trouble, really, with that run and able to get that going because it's so parallel to the line of scrimmage
right.
to start. But you know, lining up in the shotgun, he lines up a little bit behind quarterback Sam Bradford. So when he gets the handoff, he's already got a little bit of a full head of steam here at the line of scrimmage, and he's already square. So it allows him to hit that.
They're trying to simulate an eye back as much
right.
as possible, because at his core, he's really an eye back.
Sure.
But this offense does not feature an eye back. So they're trying to get as close to that as possible.
Yeah, and really, if you look at the offensive line as well, this is now the second straight game where it's been very, very consistent.
Yep.
Against the defensive line. Look, no one mistook this Giants team for one of the Super Bowl teams, but still was a formidable run defense. You know, Jonathan Hankins has been very disruptive. Beeson has been very disruptive. They've got some players there that can play along that defensive front. And the offensive line, I thought, played very, very well, once again, whether it was in pass protection or in the run game.
Yeah, you know, I think overall, particularly in the second half, and they committed more to it, I thought, which I think ultimately that's what Chip wants to do. I mean, you could probably make the argument that one reason he did so much outside sweep through the first three, four games of the season is because the interior of the O-line was not blocking well enough for the inside zone game to be effective at all. And now over the last 2 weeks, it's become a little better, this week in particular, because I think ultimately – Chip probably wants to run inside zone as his foundation run.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because it's no secret to us, but this offense funnels through the run game, because
yep.
everything that they do from a passing standpoint is a complement to what they do
right.
in the run game. So much of the boot action, so much of the we're going to run outside sweep to the right, but we're actually going to throw a screen to the left.
Right.
We saw that on the Josh Huff play, I believe it was for 13 yards, where Jason Peters releases out into space and is making a block at the second
yep.
level. You saw the boot action on a completion to Jordan Matthews. You saw four verticals off play action with the long completion to Miles Austin. Lots of play action, lots of run action. So now that you get the running game going, it really helps to fuel the rest of the offense.
Yeah, and it's still, look, they won the game. It was an odd game. It was an odd game watching it live, and it was an odd game watching it on tape, because it was a combination of both an impressive and a not-so-impressive performance, but yet they won by an impressive score.
Right.
And I still think the pass game is not where they want it to be. I think Sam Bradford is still playing a little bit erratically. I mean, even the touchdown to Riley Cooper,
oh, yeah.
a beautifully designed play, by the way.
It was perfect.
And in fact, and another point John Gruden made, which I know you knew as well, that they had not really thrown the ball, I think, but one time this season when Bradford was under center prior to that
yeah,
touchdown
it was
to
a really
Riley
good point.
Cooper. But, I mean, that was not a good throw. The design of the play so beat the defense, but that was not a good throw.
Right.
And he got lucky there. And then he still missed some that he should make. Obviously, it was a better performance than, let's say, weeks 1, 2, or 3, but he's still not quite where he needs to be.
Yeah, especially, you know, and there was the missed throws. There was that sack on third down
yep.
down in the red zone.
Yep.
Where pressure kind of forced him to his right. You know, the thought of pressure moved him to his right. I think baby steps. And look, Chip Kelly said it today, and you know, we're filming this on Tuesday evening, Tuesday morning. He said, you know, Bradford's been inconsistent. So
yeah.
you obviously want him to take the next step, and we'll see. I mean, look, it's still relatively early here in the season. Plenty of time here to progress moving forward.
I think the story, in all honesty, is the defense.
They're outstanding.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
And I think that, you know, the more I watch them, and we know about the obvious players. Okay, we know about the front three, and Cox and Logan in particular.
Right.
We know about that. I think there's two things that really you could argue have made this defense, and I'm anxious to see what they do with one of them. I think you could argue up to this point that literally the savior of this linebacking core has been Jordan Hicks.
He's been outstanding.
Is he going to sit down when
right.
Kendricks and Alonzo come back. He's the best linebacker on the team right now. He's a really good player, for not just for a rookie. He's a really good player. And the other thing that constantly stands out to me when I watch them is the total versatility
of Malcolm Jenkins and
Thurmond.
Yeah.
Because they can match those guys man-to-man against wideouts, against tight ends, against backs. And that allows them to do so many things defensively. Now, in the second half, obviously Ryan's got hurt, and I think they went to dime with Biggers matched up on Larry Donnell, and that'll get us to next week, but we'll get to that in a minute, because they obviously didn't want Najee Good out there playing, you know, in pass coverage. So they went dime.
Yeah, and it's really the other big thing, too, is that I thought Bill Davis maybe called one of his best games since he came back to Philadelphia here. Just really, really impressive in terms of, look, Odell Beckham obviously came in banged up. Had a really, really successful and a very, very effective first drive.
Yeah.
And really that first half, you know, he caught six or seven passes. Completely erased in the second half. He was shut out, and it seemed like every third down he was not just like safety over top, double covered, because they felt confident in their man-to-man coverage across the board in other areas. So, well, I thought it was a really good game plan.
Yeah, and they did a really good job in the second half. You know, that flat slant is the staple of the Giants offense.
Yep.
And they caught the Eagles a number of times in the first half, and then a number of times in the second half they switched on it. And they totally took it away.
It was the Nolan Carroll pick six was one example.
Well, the Nolan Carroll pick six was Eli should not have thrown that, because Randall fell down and they couldn't get to the slant part of the flat slant. But, I think that as a whole, Bill Davis and the defense, I mean, they're really doing a good job. And as I mentioned, to me, Jordan Hicks is playing really good football.
Yeah, and Malcolm Jenkins, once again, you know, you saw a couple of the plays down the field. I mean,
yep.
The way that he's been used, we talked about him last week and the work that he did against the running backs of the New Orleans Saints in pass coverage has just been, you know, to say outstanding, I think it's underselling it. So really, really impressed with the defensive play so far. And they've got a test this week, because this Carolina Panthers offense is – multifaceted, and the run game is, there's so many different layers to it, so much in terms of the misdirection and the read option, and then also look, I mean, they'll come one play and they'll line up and they'll run out of the shotgun basic zone read, then they'll come and run power out of I formation, and then they'll run out of the pistol or out of the wishbone they'll run power sweep with the quarterback. I mean, it's very, very interesting the different ways that they'll look to attack you on the ground.
Yeah, it's the most diverse and multidimensional running game in the NFL, and there's no team that's close. And obviously it's because of the quarterback, Cam Newton, because you have to defend him as a runner. But the thing that they do so well, which, I mean, some teams do it here and there, but they do it as a foundation, is they mix multiple concepts within the same running play.
Right.
So you might see within the same running play quarterback power and running back sweep in the same play, and Cam decides – based on the defense, usually an unblocked defender, what he's going to do. They'll run straight inside zone with a triple option element within the same play. And Cam decides what he's going to do based on the defense. So it's really difficult to prepare for, because it's multiple concepts within the same play, and you lose a lot of pursuit because you have to stay at home and defend multiple things in one play. So this will be a real test.
Yeah, no question about it. And I'll be intrigued to see the two-gapping front, you know, against an offense like this, where you can kind of mask your intentions a little bit defensively, whether they try to do different things in gap exchange. And you've seen the way that Carolina has been able to combat that with pulling.
Right.
They run a lot of counter as well. So you'll see a tight end or a fullback come across the formation in those gap exchange situations and kind of remove that linebacker scraping over the top. So it's going to be an interesting matchup, this run game.
And one of the things that they do, too, which if the Eagles choose to play a lot of man, which the Eagles play, they're a man team more than a zone team,
right,
clearly. They do what we call the easy release. Like, they could take the tight end and they just remove him as the play starts. He just runs out of the formation, and that removes a run support defender.
Right.
And very often that allows them to get clean to the second or third level.
Yeah, and I guess let me also expand on what gap exchange means. I don't know if you want to give a full
You can jump right in.
So, you know, so the gap exchange, think about it, a quarterback running a zone read play, and you see that edge defender come down and crash down on the run. You want to force the quarterback to keep the football, and you have a linebacker scraping over the top, going into the gap that was previously occupied by that edge player, and now he's there to defend the quarterback run. So, in essence, you're forcing the quarterback to keep it, only to run into a defender that wasn't in the hole that he was originally looking at.
And the one thing, though, and this is what they do so well, is they also work their pass game off a lot of these concepts,
yes.
So you have to be careful, because what they might do is make it look like that, and then they pull an offensive lineman from the backside, and he becomes the blocker in pass protection, and you lose an underneath defender because he's basically scraping or gap exchanging.
Right.
So you have to be very careful. They do a lot of things, not only in the run game, but they work the pass game off of it.
Yeah, and it's very much a vertical pass game, whether it's Corey Brown, Ted Ginn. They threw a couple of vertical plays, whether they were deep digs or post to Devin Funchess over the past couple of weeks. It's a very much a vertical pass game. They want to try and attack you down the field, and Cam Newton has the ability to make literally any throw that you can ask him to make. Now, there are some plays that it leaves on the field, no question about it, and that's going to be an issue with a guy like Cam Newton, but he's got the ability to make some throws that are just outstanding.
And I would say, because I've watched every Carolina game probably for the last 4 years on tape, I would say this year he's been less scattershot than in the past. He's missed fewer routine throws.
Okay.
Now, he certainly, if you pressure him, and obviously we saw what happens last week when the Eagles were able to get to Eli Manning, as soon as you get the pressure, it changes the quarterback's entire feel in the pocket. And there's no question that can happen to any quarterback, even the really great ones. But Cam has been a little more consistent this year, and I think he just looks more comfortable. And as you said, he can beat any coverage because of the velocity with which he throws the ball.
And at any platform,
yes.
too. I mean, he could be running full speed and just stop on a dime and just pull the trigger, and it'll look like he had to, step into the throw and crow hop. That's what other quarterbacks would have to do. He has just a flick of the wrist, and he can let it fly. And then really, also, the other part of this, the offensive line, and you talked about the pressure and how it sometimes has affected them. I was pretty impressed with the fact that, look, their offensive line got manhandled, I thought, by that Seattle defensive front. Michael Orr gave up a sack. Remmers got manhandled a couple times by Cliff Averill. And Cam, I thought, withstood it. And came back and obviously led them on that game-winning drive.
Well, those final three drives, I forget the numbers, but they were absurd. He was maybe 14 for 18 for 212 yards on the final three drives. The numbers were great. And he never really lost his composure. He never perceived pressure. I mean, Cliff Averill just ran through Remmers a number of times, which is very reminiscent of what Connor Barwin did to Marshall Newhouse last night.
And what they both Connor Barwin and Brandon Graham did last year. Against Carolina in that game on Monday Night Football.
Right, and I think it's clearly a different Carolina team.
Right.
Now, their O-line is still susceptible. Clearly, Orr on the left side can be beaten, as can Remmers on the right side. But the one player we obviously have to talk about is Greg Olsen.
Yeah.
He's the number one receiver for this team, and he lines up in specific spots, Fran. And you and I have talked about this. They like to do what a lot of teams do now that have athletic, good receiving tight ends, is they like to line him up as the single receiver on the short side of the field to the boundary when there's three receivers to the other side. You know, as we say, the backside of trips. And he can line up in a line of scrimmage position there, right, as a normal tight end. He can line up slightly detached. He can line up outside the numbers. Over the last couple of years, I've seen him win one-on-one against safeties, linebackers, and corners. So he's very dangerous when he lines up as the single receiver on the backside of trips.
Yeah, and just the ability you talked about, the ability to beat different defenders, but then also to win in different ways, whether he's out jumping people at the catch point, whether he's winning in the small game and separating at the top of his stem, winning in vertical routes down the field. You saw him catch that wheel route against cover three this past week against Seattle.
Yep.
He's a very, very versatile player, really one of the most dangerous tight ends in the NFL. I'm really interested to see how the Eagles will choose to defend him, because we saw this past week Larry Donnell you know, sometimes there was Nolan Carroll. Sometimes it was E.J. Biggers, you highlighted in out of the dime package. Yep. Malcolm Jenkins we've seen over the tight end. I think back to that Jets, the win over the Jets, and some of the ways that they shadowed coverage over Jeff Cumberland, who no one really thinks of Jeff Cumberland as this
but
dynamic. But he's an athletic tight end, and they would line him up as that backside X receiver, and they would kind of roll coverage out. You know, so I'm interested to see how the Eagles choose to defend Greg Olsen.
Look, I don't know what Bill Davis is going to do. I know they played Biggers quite a bit in the second half on Donnell, who's big and athletic. I guess I'd be surprised if Biggers was the guy.
Right.
Just because I think Olsen is a far more polished, clearly far more polished receiver than Larry Donnell at this point.
Yeah, and then the other thing, too, we should talk about, Jonathan Stewart, who's healthy. I thought he ran the ball really, really hard this past week against Seattle in a game that was a smash-mouth game, and you knew you were going to have to run the ball to win. And Jonathan Stewart ran the ball pretty hard. I thought I was impressed.
No, and you make a great point. It wasn't the numbers. The numbers were irrelevant because he only had maybe 80 yards.
Yeah.
But he ran really hard.
Yeah.
And that game demanded it, and ideally this game will as well. I mean, this should be, given the Eagles' defense, the yards, I would imagine, for Carolina, when they run inside, when they choose to give it to Stewart, inside zone or power, or I would imagine yards will be hard to come by.
Yeah, and how much dime the Eagles do decide to play will be interesting as well, because this is a heavy 12 personnel, 21 personnel, 22 personnel at times, football team offensively for Carolina. So we'll see a lot of heavy packages with fullbacks and extra tight ends, things of that nature. But then you move on to the defensive side. Luke Kuechly's back in the lineup, and he's just outstanding. You know, I keep saying outstanding today, but just watching him play, I mean, he's phenomenal. Just the way that he's able to attack the run game, I think people kind of undersell his athleticism. His instincts are off the charts.
You know, it's funny. When he came out of BC, I thought he was a high-level athlete, and I kept reading that people didn't think he was really athletic. And, again, everybody looks at stuff differently.
Right.
But I thought he was a high-level athlete. It'll be interesting to see what the Eagles do personnel-wise. This was the second week in a row they used a ton of 12 personnel. I believe they had 30 snaps of it after having 22, I believe, the week before against the Saints. So, now, they had some injuries at wide receiver. That might have played into it. I don't know who's available this week, if Aguilar's back or not. I guess we don't know the answer
early
to that.
Yep.
But, you know, I think Chip probably will stay with some 12 personnel. You know, I think Shaq Thompson, who's the third linebacker, will be out this week. But if they play nickel, and by the way, they've played a lot of nickel at times, 2-12 personnel, Carolina.
Yes.
Which is very interesting. But their duo of Kuechly and Thomas Davis, they're the fastest duo, nickel linebacker duo in the NFL, hands down. I mean, Thomas Davis, we talk about Kuechly, and deservedly so. Thomas Davis, at this age, after 3 ACL surgeries.
Yeah, that's the most impressive part, exactly.
That guy is still dynamic and explosive.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and then you look at that defensive front. We know that, you know, Charles Johnson's not there. Greg Hardy's not there anymore. They're not getting the pass rush. That's why they traded for Jared Allen. They're not getting the pass rush that they've gotten in the past from the outside. But Star Lotulelei, Kawan Short is really, really athletic. He made a couple of plays in that game that were really, really athletic, playing the piano, as they say, and just kind of moving laterally down the line of scrimmage, making plays from the backside. Kawan Short's impressive.
I'll tell you who's given them a lift, and I know, I don't know if you watched the game the week before as well, but the Towson kid, Ryan Dallaire, has shown some pass rush ability now as an edge pass rusher, and he's getting significant snaps. Look, this past week, Jared Allen was a healthy scratch.
Right.
So Ryan Dallaire is playing meaningful snaps in their sub package, which is predominantly nickel. And he's given them a little bit of speed and energy off the edge.
Yeah, Ryan Dallaire, he's kind of late to the party a little bit. A lot of the games that I watched this past week against Seattle, and then a lot of the earlier stuff. But, you know, definitely look at
that
out of Towson. Yeah, this is where he's kind of really come on. It's been the last couple of weeks here. But and then you move into the back end, and it's interesting. You know, Josh Norman has had a big year, no question about it. You look at the safety tandem. You know, Kirk Coleman, I think Eagles fans are obviously very, very familiar with. Roman Harper, who was in New Orleans, is now, and they count on him a lot in coverage. I mean, they put him in man coverage against Jimmy Graham a number of times this past week. It didn't necessarily go over too well consistently, but interesting how they use those guys on the back end.
Well, it's funny because John Gruden made the point not John Gruden. Who was it? With Carolina, the game I was watching. So whoever was the announcer made the point that they spoke to Rivera, and this might surprise Eagles fans, but Rivera, and he would have no reason to make this
sure,
up.
Sure, why not? Yeah.
Said that the key to their back end this year has been Kurt Coleman.
Interesting.
And, you know, obviously neither Harper or Coleman would be considered plus athletes for the safety position, but it's a team that plays predominantly zone. They don't play a ton of man.
Right.
And the one thing about Coleman and Harper is they're smart veterans who understand how to get lined up and where to be within the concepts of zone coverage.
Yeah, it's a very interesting defense. When they do decide to bring pressure, a lot of cool things defensively.
Yeah.
And we've talked about one sack that Thomas Davis had this past week in the game against Seattle, where they disguised some different things and kind of overloaded one side and created a matchup that they wanted. But what have you seen from them from the entirety of the season? Because I know you watch Carolina every week from a pressure standpoint.
They selectively blitz.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look at their blitz percentage versus quarterback dropbacks, they're in the bottom third of the league. So they're not. And usually teams don't attack the Eagles a ton because they play faster.
Fast, right.
But Carolina selectively blitzes. They do it based on down and distance and field location. And they've been successful when they do it. And, you know, that one you just mentioned where Thomas Davis sacked Russell Wilson last week occurred in the red zone. And they executed it about as perfectly as you can execute the blitz. And they're not necessarily complicated, but they just execute. They're really an execution defense, much more than a highly schemed defense, but they execute really well. And with Kuechly and Davis and the way, you know, Kawan Short, the players we've mentioned, but Kuechly and Davis, no team has two linebackers quite like that.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very fun matchup to watch on Sunday Night Football here. As the game gets closer, Greg Cosell, I appreciate the time here on Chalk Talk. We'll talk to you again next week.
Thanks, Fran.
Once again, Greg Cosell, he's the man. Loved his breakdown of the Panthers and what they do on offense in the run game. Really a fun offense to study. I really enjoyed going back on Monday and looking at, you know, both sides of the ball for them. But offensively in particular, just a very interesting team because of all the different layers to their run game and all the different misdirection elements. Actually, Chris Stevens actually joined me for a little bit of that breakdown and seeing how they would defend some of these option elements at Albright, you know, when he would see those kinds of teams. So really just it's a fun offense to watch. And then defensively, you know, it's like Greg and I talked about, you have all the different pressures and things like that from that Sean McDermott scheme.
Sean McDermott.
So it's a very interesting team to watch, a lot of fun to watch, and they're undefeated. So it's going to be a big test on Sunday.
I mean, the undefeated, they beat a good, obviously people will question Seattle this year, but playing at home against that defense, you got to give them a lot of credit. And Cam Newton's kind of been a guy that's kind of been heavily criticized, but you got to give him his due.
Exactly right. So we've reached that point of the show, and you guys know the spiel by now. The number one way to support the podcast, go on to iTunes, go on to Stitcher, whatever platform you use to digest this podcast, go on, rank the show, leave us a comment. It's the best way to boost us up in the rankings, and it's the best way for you to provide feedback and help us improve the show. So go on, rank it. Give us a comment, leave us a comment, leave us a message, and we will make this show better each and every week. Let's keep the ball rolling here with my good buddy Ike Reese on 2 Technique.
Time to get inside the mind of a player. It's time for 2 Technique.
Joining me once again here on 2 Technique, two times in a row, double dipping here with former Eagles linebacker Ike Reese, analyst for Eagles Game Plan. Ike, welcome back. It's obviously a huge win for the Eagles. We, you know, lots of different areas where we can discuss that. But the reason I wanted to bring you on this week was talk about this is a big zone coverage team. As I just talked about with Greg Cosell on the podcast earlier in Chalk Talk, this is a big zone coverage team in Carolina. What are the challenges of playing underneath zone coverage? And obviously, there's different responsibilities there, but playing underneath zone coverage as a linebacker.
Well, I'll tell you, the first thing is that understanding that when you're being taught, regardless if it's cover two zone, cover three zone, or even cover four, and in today's game, there's a lot more combination where
sure.
they may play man over here and zone over there. You must first be able to pattern match. And this is the term Jim Johnson used to use. because we used to play matchup zone. We
right.
would play a zone defense, but he really wanted you to match.
It's basically man.
Yes.
It's basically man when they yes. come in your zone.
And that was the whole deal. You know, zone used to be you get to an area and you have that area. If somebody comes in your area, then you cover them. And today's zone, because receivers are so good at sitting down in open windows, well, you need to hug up to your zone. So, in other words, if a man is in your zone, you need to hug him up. And for linebackers, the big thing is always understanding down and distance. Because you are typically a middle-of-the-field defender, you're going to normally get someone in front of you and then someone coming behind
sure,
you.
Sure, right.
So you have to make sure that in your pattern reading, you understand don't jump up on the guys underneath because you open up a window behind you. So I would say always for linebackers is first understanding personnel that's out there and then understanding it's not a quote-unquote zone per se as much as it is zone man.
Right.
And then you're playing the down and distance because that's what zone defense is for offense. It's about finding that open window in the zones that you're trying to cover.
So playing under Jim Johnson's defense, you know, obviously there are lots of zone blitzes, and this mm-hmm. is where Sean McDermott comes from, obviously. So you have a lot of those three deep, three under coverages in the back end. What is the hardest, I would say, responsibility for a linebacker in that situation? Is it would you rather be the, you know, a hook defender in cover two? Would you rather be a curl flat player in cover three? Or playing as that third underneath defender and you've got a much bigger area to cover in, say, a zone blitz covered and a zone coverage that way, what is the hardest of those responsibilities?
I would say the underneath guy because often it's a D lineman who has to replace
right.
another linebacker, and that's the whole concept of the zone blitz. Bring one guy, drop somebody else out into that zone, and what often happens is these guys are like fish out of water in a lot of these zone blitzes. And what you want is, as an underneath defender, is for the quarterback to get that ball out fast, because if your rush doesn't get there now, you're basically stuck with covering a large area. Me, I like being the hook defender
okay.
because when quarterbacks want to get rid of the ball, their tight end is typically the hot read somewhere, and the easiest throw for them is typically right over the middle. So if you do a good job of reading the quarterback's eyes, more importantly, knowing where that ball has to come out hot at. In other words, know what the coverage is behind you.
Right.
Know where we're coming with the blitz. We're trying to force the quarterback to throw the ball over here. Therefore, if you know that, you can cheat routes.
Sure.
And you know who was the best at that as a linebacker? Derek Brooks.
Okay.
He played yeah. at Tampa sure. 2 defense, right. and you get those zone blitzes from Monty Kiffin. And Derek was great at understanding route combinations down and distance, and he was a great athlete. So it's the reason why he picked off 30-something passes as
sure.
a linebacker.
Absolutely, absolutely. So another form of zone coverage that it's much more associated with man is that underneath hole defender in like cover one
yeah.
And some of those single high looks. How is that responsibility different than just playing as an underneath defender in, say, cover three or cover four?
Because you honestly have two responsibilities. When you're that hole defender, those guys on the outside – are expecting help from you.
Mm.
So their technique on the outside is going to be to funnel those offensive players to you. And you have to do a great job of recognizing who's the most dangerous guy. Okay, this is the guy's coming. I got to communicate. I got him now. And now that guy replaces you as the zone zone defender. And that's what was so complicated about Jim Johnson's defenses and why everyone had to know what the other guys were doing. Because if we put a blitz in like that where you have what we call a rat in the hole, well, if that rat takes your guy and helps you, now you have to replace him and his responsibility. And so you have to know that now that zone blitz has just gone to man because you have to take that receiver and there's not another defender there for him.
Absolutely, no question about it. So one last question before I let you go here.
Love talking defense.
I know, I'm with you, man.
Love it.
One last question here. In man coverage, would you rather – be responsible for a running back out of the backfield, and this is in generality, so it could be Darren Sproles, it could be Brandon Jacobs we're talking about
okay.
in terms of body types, but or would you rather be dealing with a tight end? So obviously the bigger body, but you know, there's some give and take there between the
yeah.
two positions.
It's funny because when I was playing, tight ends weren't as athletic
okay.
as they are
that's
today.
A good point.
We pretty much had Tony Gonzalez, you know, a few guys. You know what? That's a good question, man. And it's hard to answer without knowing who the person is.
Without it is, absolutely.
But for me and my body type, I was a athletic guy that could pretty much run with running backs. The tight ends, because of their size, I think can pose a bigger threat because tight ends, for example, Algie Crumpler,
right,
the guy you had to guard sometime, he used that big butt of his to shield you off. And now, even though you have him covered, his body is wide enough that you can't get to the ball without passing interference.
It's low post basketball.
Exactly. So with the running backs, I always felt they were a little easier to cover unless you get a guy like Sproles or Brian Westbrook. I mean, those are just guys are just difficult to cover. But you could be physical with those guys. They were worried about you running them over. And most running backs I could run with, most of them.
Sure.
There were a few that could outrun me. But so I would rather cover a running back than a tight end.
I agree. Appreciate the insight once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We'll talk to you again soon.
No, no problem. Just for the record, I could do both. I could do both.
All right, let the record show. Great stuff from Mike Reese. You know, once again, it was great having him here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. And I do want to have him in once we get into the offseason, B. I'm thinking some Chalk Talk action with Ike.
I think getting alumni, especially when he was talking, when he did the first Chalk Talk a couple weeks ago, and he talked about how Jim Johnson designs a blitz for you.
Sure.
And he said if he designed a blitz for you and you didn't go all out for that blitz, you felt like you were letting
you
him
probably
down
weren't getting it again
because he put all this effort into getting you free. So
sure.
It's always great kind of reminiscing and hearing these old anecdotal stories that you just never knew kind of, you know, went along and behind the scenes stuff.
Exactly. So I'm anticipating that we'll probably bring him back for Chalk Talk here once we get into the offseason. But Ike Reese, excellent stuff once again. And again, if you're listening to this podcast on the Eagles app or on the website, and if you like what you hear, it's really easy to listen to the show each week. All you got to do, go to your native podcast app. It's on your smartphone. You can go on your tablet as well and subscribe. You might be listening on Apple TV or on Chromecast, wherever it is that you're deciding to subscribe on Podbay. You'll find that app. Subscribe, and this will come to your device each and every week, and you can listen whenever you want. So it's fantastic stuff. BT was the one who got me hooked on podcasts, and I have not been the same since, and that's all I listen to now. So if you like it, go on, subscribe, and you will get it to your phone each and every week. It's good stuff. So let's wrap the show up like we do each and every week, talking some college football.
It's time for Saturday Scouting.
Joining me this week on Saturday Scouting, and it has been far too long since we've last heard from our good friend Tony Pauline from DraftInsiders.net. Tony, it's been a few weeks here since we've heard from you here from the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, but a lot has gone on in the world of college football. The NFL draft process is continuing to move forward as we get closer and closer to our rendezvous in St. Petersburg, Florida for the East-West Shrine Game. Let's start first really with some of the early news that we've gotten from juniors and underclassmen declaring for the draft. We had our first official declaration in Miles Jack from UCLA. I know you've put out some news here and there on Twitter on people that may declare. What are some other news of players you've been hearing recently of underclassmen that may decide to forego their senior season and enter the NFL draft?
Well, I hear a lot of the big names on defense are basically in the process of choosing agents. A'shaun Robinson of Alabama, I hear, is close to deciding on representation. Obviously, you cannot sign with an agent or your college career will be prematurely ended. Jaylon Smith, Notre Dame, the outstanding outside linebacker, I hear he is ready to go, and they are vetting agents. Leonard Floyd of Georgia, who almost entered last year's draft, all signs point to him entering this year's draft. And I mean, there's an interesting guy. He can be a top 15 player if he's productive and plays at his level of achievement. But if he kind of tails off the way he did at the end of 2014, he's going to be a second round pick. I've heard all along that Sua Cravens of USC will enter the draft. That is almost a given, especially now that they had a change in head coaches. You know, the two programs that you really have to focus on, and that the information is going to be late in coming out, is Ohio State and Mississippi. When you look at those two programs, from the underclassmen ranks, you're looking at 6 to 7 potential first-round picks from just those two schools. Joey Bosa, defensive end, Ohio State. Eli Apple, cornerback from Ohio State. Ezekiel Elliott, the running back from Ohio State. Laquan Treadwell, the receiver from Mississippi. Darren Lee, the outside linebacker from Ohio State. Tunzel, who hasn't played yet, the offensive tackle from Mississippi. And Nemdichie, the defensive lineman from Mississippi. I mean, those two schools could potentially have 20% of the first round just from the underclassmen ranks. So those are two schools that you really have to focus on, besides the names I just mentioned.
So what have you heard about Tunzel in particular, who, a guy that I'll be honest, I watched him in, over the offseason off his sophomore tape, and he looks like a top-five pick. I mean, the guy looks the part of an NFL blindside protector. What have you heard from Tunsil's side in terms of whether or not he could declare? Because obviously he's going to get his first action of the year against Myles Garrett and Texas A&M coming up. Do you feel like he is going to declare for the draft?
I'll be surprised if he doesn't declare for the draft. I mean, I'm hearing that he's very likely to enter. Want to wait and see once he gets into some game action how it goes. But, I mean, even before the season, people were predicting, people I know in the air are saying he's likely to go. Obviously, hasn't played in a month and a half, but I would be surprised if he does not make himself available for the NFL draft come by January 15th.
You mentioned Sua Cravens from USC, and, you know, obviously there's been some movement over the last couple of weeks in terms of college football and the coaching ranks. Steve Sarkisian out at USC, Steve Spurrier stepping down at South Carolina. With some of these schools now opening up with coaching opportunities, typically what you see is some of the underclassmen from those schools decide to enter the draft. Do you think that with guys, if you look at South Carolina, there's the receiver, Farrow Cooper, a linebacker, Sky Moore, has been really impressive to me whenever I've watched them. USC, I know you've mentioned in the past on Twitter, Zach Banner, the mammoth right tackle from USC. Are there any other players from those two schools that you think could decide to enter?
You know, I've not heard it, and the thing about it is, after Sua Cravens, there's really no impact guys, no guys that are going to be potential top 32. You know, Farrell Cooper is a good player. What's his size? There are questions about his consistency. Is he anything more than a middle-round choice? Can he hop into that third-round area? There may be, but I don't think they're going to be the types of players that are going to impact the top 40 selections come next April.
Very interesting. So every year there's always, too, some of those surprise players that declare, maybe from the small school ranks, players that maybe were backups at the high level. Are there any surprise names that may declare for the draft that you've heard of so far?
Well, if you read my article from yesterday, keep in mind the name of Cooper Kupp, the wide receiver from Eastern Washington, who I heard is going to enter the draft. He's been an incredibly productive receiver. Last weekend against Idaho State, 14 catches for 161 receiving yards, 2 touchdowns. You say, well, that's Idaho State, big deal. Listen, the season opener against Oregon, a team that outclassed Eastern Washington, he had 15 receptions for 246 yards and 3 scores, has just been very impressive all along. You look at his stats. I mean, they're off the charts, his freshman and sophomore season. Very productive receiver that's, you know, had a change in quarterbacks when Vernon Adams left to go to Oregon, and he still kept up the productivity. The Eastern Washington program does employ a lot of 3 and 4 receiver sets and spread the field out, so he's benefited from that, but he's a natural pass catcher. If you remember, Tywan Jones, who's been in the league for a few years now, entered the draft as a junior out of Eastern Washington. And that was a guy who was a really terrific athlete, but really didn't have a position in the NFL. He was a return specialist who was tried to cornerback, came out of college at running back, a return specialist who was initially tried in the defensive backfield, was going back to running back. I think Kupp is a little bit different in the sense that I don't know what kind of athlete he is, but he's a terrific football player. And as I said in my piece, you know, a lot will depend on how he works out, on how on his speed. He's not a really big guy, and with juniors, you really don't know what their true measurables are. He looks like he's about 6'1", 200 pounds. He's going to have to run in that low 4.4 range if he wants to break into the second day of the draft. Otherwise, I think he's a very solid middle-round choice who could line up at the next level in the slot or as a number 4 receiver.
Very, very interesting. So sticking with the theme of receivers entering the NFL draft, this guy's a senior, but he's done his college football career at this point. Duke Williams from Auburn.
Going into the year, a lot of people thought that this kid was probably the best senior wideout available. Is that still the case now after a very, we'll say, checkered start to his 2015 season?
Checkered, inconsistent, and marginally productive, I think, would be three words to describe it. And, you know, the short answer to your question is no. I mean, when you looked at Williams, the tape never matched the reputation. I mean, he was, as I described him a couple of weeks ago, an enigma. I mean, he was a guy who looked the part, who could be dominant, but would just disappear for long streaks. And more than anything else, or worse than anything else, is he just never came across as a consistent receiver. I mean, he wasn't a guy who had those natural soft hands, as opposed to, say, somebody like Treadwell of Mississippi, who was able to make all the receptions anywhere on the field in contorted positions. At times with Williams, I always got the idea he was a much better athlete than he was a receiver. And those types of guys, and he was someone, like you said, a lot of people, even in the scouting community, thought, you know, first round, never projected him like that. And when you look at what's going on off the field and the inconsistencies on the field, college career is over. He's the type of guy I think will, if he cleans it up, gets an invite to the Senior Bowl, which will be all important to him. You know, there's a lot of risk there for a variety of reasons. I think he's lucky if he goes in the second round, but if he shows some good things prior to the draft, you know, the NFL wants those big body receivers these days, the guys that can get down the field. He matches it from a physical point of view, just he's got to develop his game on the field and learn to mature off of the field.
Tony, 1 year ago at this time, you were really the first person in the country that was talking about Miami of Ohio cornerback Quinton Rollins, who ended up going in the second round. He was one of the surprise invites to the Senior Bowl down in Mobile, Alabama a year ago. Are there any players right now that you see that are maybe flying under the radar from a national scope, but you know, could see their name called earlier than a lot of people are projecting at this point, or could get that surprise All-Star Game invitation?
Two players, one's not really flying under the radar. Ironically, both play for Louisiana Tech, so they're going to be able to get to that southern flavor that they like at the Senior Bowl. Vernon Butler, the big defensive tackle. I mean, this guy is a mauler on the inside. If you watch the Mississippi State game, they're double-teaming him. He's holding the point. He shows the ability to make plays. Not only that, he occupies the gaps and allows his teammates or gives his teammates opportunities to make plays on the ball. He's constantly in the action or involved in making plays or helping to make plays. And you know, the Senior Bowl is viewed as a quarterback's game, and it basically is, because quarterbacks really have the ability to move up draft boards, but so does defensive linemen. I think Vernon Butler, who right now is sort of not a well-known name in that middle-round area, if he goes to the Senior Bowl and has the type of week that he's capable of, he could jump into that second day. The other guy out of Louisiana Tech that you got to start to pay attention to, who I could get an invitation to the Senior Bowl, is the quarterback Jeff Driscoll, the Florida transfer. I mean, here's a guy who was much maligned when he played for the Gators, very inconsistent, seems to have found himself in that Louisiana Tech offense where he's much more comfortable in the pocket, has been very productive, has stayed away from mistakes, had a very good game against Mississippi State. I mean, they were up early, has got the physical skills to play at the next level, seems to be putting it together. So if Driscoll continues on this path where he's very productive, I'm sure he'll get a Shrine Game invite. I'm sure the Senior Bowl would love to bring a guy, you know, a former SEC quarterback who plays for Louisiana Tech into the game. There's another guy to keep an eye on.
All right, Tony, staying with the quarterback position, I'm going to fire some names at you, and we'll kind of go rapid fire here to close this out. Some of the big-name quarterbacks in the country, because I feel like right now, this in terms of this draft, people are trying to peg one guy as the guy to kind of be the namesake for this draft class. So let's just start at the top, and we'll start with a name that I know that you were not very high on at the start of the season, and that's Christian Hackenberg from Penn State, who's got all the physical tools but has not been able to put it together under this new coaching staff. And James Franklin has had some up and down performances, some good, some bad here in the opening stretch of 2015. What are people saying about Christian Hackenberg, and do you think that he will enter the draft, or do you think he'll stay in school for another year with the Nittany Lions?
Basically saying he's a big arm thrower. He's got to learn to be a passer. He's got to make better decisions. He's got to improve his accuracy. Doesn't seem to be on the same page as his receivers. I mean, they're saying basically if he's happy being a second or third round pick, at that, then he should enter the draft. Otherwise, if he really wants to be a first-round pick, he's got to go back to school. Now, I reported, it was sort of misreported that I said he's going to enter the draft. I had heard that he was leaning towards entering the draft and that he has decided on an agent. I mean, that was a few weeks into the season. I think a lot has to be played out as far as Hackenberg is concerned, but the overriding theme is he should stay in school unless somehow the last five games of the year, last six games of the year, he's able to pull a rabbit out of a hat and look like a franchise quarterback, or his play on the field matches the physical skills.
All right, staying in the Big Ten then, looking at Ohio State, and you have Cardale Jones, who's been the starter now. We've got a more than a three-game sample after we had from last year. We now have had about six games with Cardale Jones as the starting quarterback for the Buckeyes. What is your feeling on what scouts think about Cardale Jones now at this stage?
Sort of like Hackenberg, although he's a little bit more productive. I mean, just incredible physical skills, but really needs a lot of work on his overall game. I mean, is he going to be starting the next game for Ohio State, or is JT Barrett going to take that position over for him? I mean, he's a guy with a very limited body of work. People went gaga over the three games he played last year. They love the fact that he can throw the ball 70 yards down the field. He can also make plays with his legs. The problem is you don't know where the ball is going to end up. So he needs a lot of mechanical work. He needs a lot of work on his reads and decision-making when pressured. Problem is he's a bit overage. You know, what kind of shelf life does he have? I think overall, you know, when you watch him play this year, scouts like some of the things that he's done, but he still needs a lot of work. They would prefer that he goes back to school to really try and improve his game a little bit more. Would only not only make Cardale Jones a better quarterback, would make the scouts' jobs a lot easier, because if they're giving him, you know, third-round grades and somebody wants to take him late in round one or early in round two, that can be that basically can develop some conflict in war rooms.
All right, let's go out west to a guy that I feel like everybody wants to hail as the top quarterback available in this draft, and he hasn't declared yet. There hasn't been any rumors one way or another. Hopefully, maybe you can clear some of that up for us. That's Jared Goff out of Cal, who's had a big year. I know he had a five-interception game against Utah a week ago, but you look at Goff's skill set, and everyone talks about the big arm and the accuracy, the decision-making. What have you heard from NFL scouts about Goff? How do they feel about the Pac-12 junior, and do you think that he ultimately will enter?
I had been told prior to the season that while Cody Kessler, who was ranked coming into the year as the number one senior quarterback, while Cody Kessler was the number one rated quarterback from the senior class, Goff was really the quarterback in the Pac-12 that scouts love. Now, that said, you know, they think he's a bit physically immature. I don't mean that in a mean way. I mean, he's just a skinny guy. Is he going to be able to handle to hold up to the rigors at the next level? How much time is it going to take before he's able to really, you know, develop his body? Obviously, you know, the five interceptions is not good. They don't have great talent at Cal. They don't have great talent on the offensive line. They got some decent receivers. They don't have any great receivers. He's a quarterback that if he enters may take a little bit of time. He's got a great amount of upside potential. May take a little bit of time for him to physically develop and really just get acclimated to playing in an NFL system with NFL type of players. You know, I'm hearing right now it's 50-50. When you get into those schools like Cal and Stanford, those guys who enjoy playing college football, those guys who, you know, go to those Ivy League West schools, you never can tell. I really can't get my thumb on the pulse now as to whether or not Goff is going into the draft from what I've been hearing.
All right, well, you mentioned him earlier. The guy on the other side of the coin there in California is USC quarterback Cody Kessler. A lot of people thought was maybe the best senior signal caller in this class. With Steve Sarkisian out, his offensive coordinator Clay Helton has taken over as head coach. Where do you see Kessler's draft stock at this point in the 2015 season?
And Clay Helton takes that over the head job, and Kessler played a terrific game against Notre Dame, against a good Notre Dame defense. You know, the thing is this is Kessler was perfect for that Steve Sarkisian system. You know, that West Coast type of system where he's rolling outside of the pocket. But when you talk to scouts, and I've talked to numerous sources before I went with the story last week, you know, a lot of people think he's a last day pick. Some have said he's a sixth or seventh round pick. He just does not have the physical skills to hold up at the next level. He doesn't have the big arm. He doesn't have the great pocket size. He basically doesn't have the foot speed that you're going to be able to do a lot of read option with him, where, as opposed to, say, like a guy like Russell Wilson, he's going to be able to pick up yardage with his feet. So there's a lot of concerns that he's just, while he's a very good college quarterback, He's just not a great next-level prospect, and that happens sometimes, and that's what I'm hearing with Kessler. He's very enjoyable to watch on the college field, but when you take that next step up, you know, all of a sudden the arm strength, the athleticism, the size, that plays a bigger role into it. There are some people, as I said in my article, who think that the guy who he beat out for the starting job, Max Whittick, who transferred to Hawaii, who struggled at Hawaii this year, based on the physical skills, Max Whittick is a better prospect than Cody Kessler. I think it still has to, a lot has to be played out. I'd like to see if Kessler goes to the Senior Bowl and how he does. But, you know, watching, as you guys in Philadelphia, you know, watching these Pac-12 quarterbacks, guys like Matt Barkley, who are highly rated coming into the season, then tumble through draft boards for whatever reason, it's not the first time it's happened, and I think that's what's happening with Kessler right now.
One last guy I wanted to ask you about, Tony, and it's kind of the polar opposite here in terms of Cody Kessler, who is undersized, doesn't have the great arm, from a big school. Now you go back to the East Coast, to Memphis, where you have Paxton Lynch, 6'7", big arm, from the American Athletic Conference. They go and they beat Ole Miss, who was a top two team in the country a couple weeks ago, beat them at home. What is your thought on Lynch, and what are scouts saying about him? He's a junior, obviously, so he may decide to stay in school. What have you been hearing about Lynch and what his prospects could be moving forward?
Yeah, not only different from Cody Kessler, but a bit different from Cardale Jones and Christian Hackenberg, in the sense that here's a guy with all the physical skills that is starting to develop into a passer, really improving his accuracy, his defensive reads. I think he completed 70% of his passes, I believe, against Mississippi defense. That's got six draftable prospects on it. Really, he is starting to hit his stride, and he's taking those physical skills and learning to go from a thrower to a passer. Has got a great amount of upside. Obviously, you need to see more performances. He needs to prove that the Mississippi game was not just a one-off instance. Although he played well earlier in the year, I think, depending on, Memphis is undefeated right now, and they're going to compete for the American Athletic Conference Championship. So I think, you know, depending on what happens with the team and the rest of the season, and the fact is, overall, this is not a good quarterback class. This is a class where you've got some throwers like the guys we mentioned, Cardale Jones and Christian Hackenberg. You've got a guy that's potentially very good in Jared Goff. You got someone who's tumbling down draft boards in Cody Kessler, and we haven't even mentioned Connor Cook yet. You know, if the information comes back that he's going to be a second-day pick, I think there's a very good chance that Paxton Lynch decides to bolt for the NFL.
Tony Pauline from DraftInsider.net, it's been far too long. I appreciate the time once again here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. We'll talk to you very soon.
Thanks, Ram.
Great stuff from Tony. It was good talking to him. It's been way too long since we had Tony Pauline on the program. And, again, you can follow him on Twitter, at Tony Pauline. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. Give me a follow if you like what you're hearing on this podcast. I tweet out the links to this one, all the other podcasts I'm a part of, the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast, the College Draft podcast, the Eagles Insider podcast. The Journey to the Draft podcast is now 3 weeks in and going on 4 weeks here this weekend, going strong as we get closer and closer to the All-Star Game circuit and the draft process. So you want to get a heads up on some of these top prospects and what they mean for the Eagles as they approach the offseason. You might want to give that a listen over the weekend. And you can always go back and listen to some old ones. So just follow me on Twitter, and I tweet all that stuff out. So very, very excited to get the Journey to the Draft podcast going.
I was
going to
say, you brought up Tony. I'm like, I can't wait for the Shrine Game and Senior Bowl. But, you know, having a figure out who Tony can't pronounce, Marquis Lee, or who's the tight end out of Colorado State?
That was Baylor. That was Jordan. Oh, Baylor, Jordan Najvar is what Jordan he called it. It was actually Navajar. Yeah, all right, exactly.
Always look forward to working with Tony and doing some stuff with him. But so in the vein of college football, we have matchups for this week.
Yes.
When is PJ Walker gonna make it onto your matchup list here?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and they've got a big week, and obviously everyone's talking they're ranked for the first time in 36 years. Really, really exciting times if you're a Temple football fan, if you're a Temple alum.
My drops right now. I play T for Temple.
I know you'd play the song, which I appreciate that. You know, it's obviously great, but look, you can't look ahead to Notre Dame. You can't be smelling yourself now that you're ranked. You have to take care of business on the road against East Carolina, a team that a year ago they were ranked and were coming to your house at Lincoln Financial Field. Justin Hardy and Shane Carden and some of the other players that they had on that team. and you guys were, you know, Temple was able to beat that ranked ECU team. You don't want the same thing to happen to you. And I would imagine that that's the same message that Matt Rhule is giving to his team this week. It helps that they're not favored going down there. So that'll help add a little fuel to
the
fire.
Yeah.
But I do have a matchup from that game that I want to talk about.
Nice.
And look, next week there's a ton of matchups in that Notre Dame game because it's interesting. All the best prospects from Temple match up in terms of, you know, some of the top prospects for Notre Dame. So you'll see some interesting battles.
Right.
Yeah, you'll see some interesting position battles. But this week, the one I want to focus on, and it's Temple's best player in terms of his name and the way that he's been producing throughout his career, and that's linebacker Tyler Matakevich, who's really instinctive. He's really tough. He's been a tackle machine. He's got over 400 tackles in his career. Yeah, and he has one of those single digits. And the way
I love defense guys, especially those front seven guys with single digits because they stand out. You know,
here's the thing. This was an Al Golden thing from when he was there. The top nine tough guys on the team get a single digit. So Matakevich has had that single digit for the last couple of years as one of the top nine tough guys on the team. And, you know, he absolutely earns it. And just his savvy, his instincts make him a really interesting player. He's going to get drafted. It's just a matter of when. I'll be interested to see how he tests when he goes down to the combine in February. He'll get matched up a couple times here on ECU's best weapon on the offensive side of the football. And that's tight end Bryce Williams, an athletic guy, kind of a movable chess piece, has some good size. Has good ball skills and has the ability to stretch the field. So it'll be an interesting matchup here for Matakevich in preparation for that Notre Dame offense, which is obviously can attack you in a lot of different ways. So a big matchup there for Thursday night if you want to check that out. I believe it's on ESPN2, that Thursday night action there with the American Athletic Conference.
Love those Thursday night games because it kind of gets you into the college football weekend.
Exactly and, right.
Like you said, watch out for those track games, especially those Thursday travel games.
Oh, yeah.
No, everyone kind of like you expecting to go down there, come off big
this
wins.
This is a classic trap situation.
One-week season.
Yep, no question about it. So a big game here for Temple. So the last two matchups I've got, Alabama, big game this week against Tennessee, one of the biggest games of the weekend, especially in the SEC. You've got Derrick Henry, Kenyon Drake, two running backs from Alabama who, look, Derrick Henry, don't really need to say much about him. You kind of know what he can do, and you know he ran for, I think it was 240 plus, 200 plus.
Yeah, somewhere. I mean, somewhere that he had 200 yards in the first half.
Yeah, I mean he's very, very physical downhill. You know, and has shown a lot of improvement this year in a lot of different areas. And Drake is a guy that, look, he's a dynamic playmaker. They try and find ways to get him the football in the passing game. He's used often in the perimeter run game as well. So pretty dynamic, and he's going up against his Tennessee front seven. We've talked about Derek Barnett in the past. Jalen Reeves-Maben is an interesting guy. He's kind of a playmaking linebacker for them. So really interested to watch this Alabama run game against this Tennessee front seven. And then finally, looking at Indiana, Michigan State in the Big Ten, you've got a tackle that I haven't watched yet, but our good friend Tony Pauline is really high on this tackle from Indiana, Jason Spriggs, and he's got a good test this week against Shalik Calhoun from Michigan State. Bane, as he was nicknamed a couple years ago, big, long athletic. I've compared him in the past to a Chandler Jones, who was a first-round pick out of Syracuse for the New England Patriots and has been a starter for them for a long time now. It'll be an interesting battle, and when I go to watch Spriggs this offseason, one of the first games I will be turning on will be this game. So this is going to go a long way towards how he's looked at as the draft process unfolds. But that's going to do it for our matchups this week, and that'll do it for the entire podcast. And thanks again to Greg Cosell, to Ike Reese, to Tony Pauline. That's a great triumvirate there.
That's
my go-to.
That's
my three guys right there. You know, for the Eagle Line and Sky podcast.
Five to start with right there.
No question about it. So thanks again to all of you guys out there listening, especially those of you that promote the show on social media, whether you're listening on Stitcher, on TuneIn, on Spotify, iTunes, and, of course, the Eagles app on PhiladelphiaEagles.com or FlyEaglesFly.com. Thank you. And if you get the time, go on, rate the show, leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Shoot me a question. I want to hear from everybody out there and keep all of you happy. So wherever you listen, just go and shoot us a note. We'll keep making this show better each and every week. I really appreciate everybody out there who continues to promote the show on social media. That being said, it's got another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For my producer, BT, I'm Fran Duffy. And for the sleeping Chris Stevens in the corner, we will see you all next week.